Okay, tonight we're going to be taking a different turn from what we've studied so far, but this is immensely practical, and actually, I kind of hinted at this a couple of classes ago, this is probably the very foundation of if you want to keep from being deceived, if you want to be one that's able to discern and overcome deceptive people or deceptive situations. We first have to build a heart that Jesus would describe as one that is without guile. And that is, if you took anything from this class, this would be the thing to work on. You cannot be a deceptive person and not end up being deceived. Our hearts are built in a certain way that the only way we'll see accurately and wisely is to be committed to our God and be committed to His ways. And the longer I live, the more I study people and look at things. This is like later in life for me, but I've really come to see building the fruit of the Spirit in your life is the crucial thing. If we are honest, honorable people, if we want to serve others and serve God with all of our heart, if we are going to hate what is evil, and we're going to be committed to that, God will take care of us. And we'll learn to reason. But I've learned that if you don't commit to those things, it is so easy to get into a state of mind where you don't want to think about things. And you're lost when that happens. You'll not be in a position to be able to discern about anything. In Matthew 22, 37 through 40, this will be the thrust of our next two classes. I titled the outline, How God's Love Protects Us from Deception. That's an interesting title, isn't it? I want to show you exactly how that happens. In Matthew 22, 37, it says, Jesus said to him, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and prophets. And I would add to this, on these two commandments will hang our future of whether or not we're going to be deceived or we're going to live in what is right. This approach toward God and others will be the acid test of whether or not God has moved us and changed us. And I just want to say, this shouldn't be a burden. This should be a delight. Yes, we are weak. Yes, we at times have been deceptive. Yes, we may be coming from a very deceptive background. But here I'm talking about someone who's committed to God and is determined to go that path. If we'll just do that, God will help us. We'll get out of stuff. We never are free from the temptation of deception. None of us. I'll just tell you, you're never freed from it, but what you have to do is say, I am going to serve my God and imitate Him. I am not going to give in and excuse that which is wrong. And as you begin to look at, first off, loving God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, one thing we know about our God, let me ask you this, why do we trust God? What is it about God that makes us totally open to Him, that we will put our lives in His hands, even though we don't understand everything, we understand what God wants? What is it about God's character that makes us draw ourselves close to Him? So many aspects, but give me one. Why do you trust God?
He never lies.
What's that?
That's
right. He never lies. I like how it's put. And good, you're reading the outline. And if nothing else, you know where I'm going to read the outline, what I'm trying to get through my discussion question. He also loves us. You know, He provides for us totally when He didn't need to. So I know somebody cares for me. Somebody never lies. Notice how it's put here. God is pictured as a God of life. But notice here. Can you tell me where no deception is found in this verse? Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. In James 1, the passage we just read, where is no deception found? There's a phrase that I think would indicate no deception. Do y'all see it? He's the Father of lights. We got that. Then what's the next phrase?
There's no variation or shadow of turning.
Yeah. What you see is what you get. There's no tricks. There's no hypocrisy. God is absolutely consistent. And I will tell you, as you build your life, you want to build on things that are consistent, that are rocks. And by the way, is this just about God? Where are we found in verse 18? What are we to be in relationship to this character? What are we described as in the very last part of verse 18? We're the first fruits of his creatures. You see, the essence of being a Christian is knowing God and being like God. And when it comes to deception, our God lets us know. He never lies. Titus 1:2. In hope of eternal life, which God who cannot lie promised before time began. We are not like God, but we want to be like God. Brethren, tonight, I just want to say this to you. Hate deception. Hate lies. Never, never, never give in to a deception. And don't cover up a deception. Don't do it. This approach will give you a heart that will bless you. And so, the temptation we have, how does the world view deception? When is deception bad to the world? Deception is bad when what? How would they put it? They say, all deception's not bad. Matter of fact, a lot of deception's good. Now, that's not true, but that's what the world says. Well, when does the world say deception is good? Now, remember, worldliness is what? It's a philosophy where I look at myself, my needs, my flesh, my desires. So deception is good when? Yeah, I get what I want. If I want to overthrow a sitting president of the United States, I could take the major agencies of government and try to frame people, which is happening right now and is being exposed. But it's amazing because it's all about power. You see, if your politics is power, then if you get away with it, you do it. See, that's the world. But remember my little comic strip we put up there? Well, if you can lie and get away with it, who will you do that to? Well, it depends on who your needs are at the moment. Would you sell out anybody potentially? Yes. If they'll lie for you, they'll lie to you. And by the way, in looking for a mate, integrity is critical. It's really important. And I'm not saying the person may never have deceived you. But you want somebody who's committed to that. You want to marry somebody that you trust. It's really, really important. And so I'm talking about how to build life here. Because the fascinating thing, and there was an old quote I didn't include it here, but no rule of law, none will work in talking about countries unless you've got moral people enforcing those laws. And that's why this country may fall in your days. Don't know. But if it does, it's going to be not because we've got great laws, it's because we've got immoral people running it. And I'm not always optimistic about the world, but I'm saying for us, we have to hate all deception. And if we kind of like the deception that benefits us and hate the deception that hurts us, we're just like the world. There is no difference. And the Lord tells us friendship with the world is enmity with God. Let me give you another verse. Another passage. Because this has been interesting to me. This is something, because I love people. I've baptized several people over the years. I've been close to people. And I guess, I don't think this is unusual, but I'm kind of the spiritual mortician in some ways. When somebody falls away that I've known, I try to learn as much as I can about it decades later. I try to learn more about the families, the person, where they ended up, because I'd like to keep people from falling away, okay? And I have found that Satan has a very interesting technique to destroy people. What he oftentimes does is, does somebody wrong? Satan does, maybe through somebody in the church or somebody in the community. And that person, rather than learning how to trust God and forgive and move on, they actually hit back at that person in the way that person's hit them. What happens then? Who wins in that case? Satan wins. Satan was the one that hurt you in the first place, and then you join Satan's tactics, and he wins both ways. And that goes back to the works of the flesh. You study the works of the flesh, there are a lot of ways to lose your mind. If you can't let go of a hurt and move on, if you are so super sensitive, somebody's hurt you, and you got to get vengeance and get them back, it will destroy you. And so I can say this, if somebody's lied to you and deceived you, and you end up becoming a liar and deceiver yourself, then who wins? I've seen that pattern often. Look at 2 Thessalonians 2:11 and 12. Here's something that we talk about, hating deception. Here's the flip side of it. And for this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie, that they all might be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Let's look at some more translations on this. I didn't recognize that there's some other translations that phrase this differently. I'd like somebody to give me another translation of verse 12. I got New King James up there. What's another verse? Somebody got another translation? And tell me what translation you got when you're ready to read. Okay, go ahead. What you got? Okay, verse 12. Okay, well, that's pretty well the same one. Okay.
In order that all may be condemned, do not believe the truth.
Okay, I may have needed to include another verse. The love of the truth. I thought that phrase again. I guess we could do that here. Let me pull up my Bible program here. I thought, and maybe I'm just, my mind fooled me here, but let me see if that has that phrase. No, it's not there. Oh, yeah, it is. Verse 10. Okay, what did I miss here? I did 11 and 12. I left out 10. Here we go. 10 is where I wanted to get. So it's a little error in the outline. It says, with all unrighteous deception amongst those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth. So there's two sides here. We can describe it either way. But unless you have a love for the truth, guess what will happen to you? If you don't have an absolute commitment that I want what was right, I want to see what is right, I don't want deception, I want truth. If you don't have that complete commitment to do that, what does this verse say is going to happen to you and me? We'll fall for deception. And right now in our culture, we're living in crazy world. We're living in the craziest, crazy world that I've ever seen, certainly politically. I mean, it's just the Barnum and Bailey circus. And there's no principle. You know, I'm seeing stuff going on like rule of law means nothing. But I'm worried, too, in terms of society. Like, I saw something the other day. Again, I may be getting off topic, but you know, now you talk about some people, well, two men can marry, two women can marry. You know what the next thing is? And it's a crazy world. People are now marrying themselves. Okay, and they have got a name for that. Now, I don't know why they want to do that. I don't know why it would happen if they get a divorce. Maybe they got split personalities or something. But we're living in crazy world where definitions are changed. And so you got to be careful about the crazy world. We got to love the truth. And God's word is truth. And there's going to be a lot of people like they just want to do what works for them. And whether it's truth or whether it's deception, you know, they'll go either way. And so, that is the thing that this lesson really is almost a summary of Hebrews 1, 9 and 10, where it just says, you loved righteousness and hated lawlessness. So now, if we want to hate all deception, what is necessary? If I tell you, you know, you need to fight deception. So let's start talking about a toolbox. And you don't have to follow my outline, but what if we were going to overcome deception, what should be in our toolbox? What are some skill sets and understanding we need to have to fight deception? Yes. Okay. We need to have rules about what truth looks like. Truth is not inconsistent. And we're going to talk about tonight, we're going to talk about what a lie is. But we're talking about what truth is, characteristics of truth. We got to kind of learn how to see what the genuine is versus the counterfeit. And there's a lot more things we can add to that. But let's keep going. Toolbox to overcome deception. Give me some more things. Yes. We need to spend time with it. Like if you pursue, as you have in academia, a higher degree. You don't get there by, you know, watching TV all night and just showing up to class taking tests, do you? You know, you end up not only study, you go through labs. You know, if you're talking about a science project, you go through things where you get to understand, you know, concepts and apply it. Same thing's true of Scripture. It really does take time and dedication, and it doesn't happen overnight, you know. And so, be patient. But you see, seek the tools. I appreciate, and I don't want to discriminate against those who are not in the science field, but in the science field, you learn these truths. You learn that there has to be a development of some skill sets in order to, and what I'm talking about here is discernment. So we're giving subsets of discernment. Well, we've got to learn how to discern, and if you're not taught it, you may not know how to do it. Yes. Yes.
So if we get in the habit of trusting, trust but verify,
yes,
and then sort of being intentionally skeptical, we'll find out, we'll be able to weed, at least sort of weed through the chaff.
It's really good. I like what you're saying. It's gaining of experience. And see, one of the things about a shepherd, an elder, that's something that's a real big deal for us. You know, we have to be in a flock really being able to see. Because when you're younger, you may not have experience or see dangers that an elder may see. If they've got a pure heart, if they're doing what they ought to do. But that's some of the skill sets you develop. You really do. It's another ability to discern. It's not that we trust our brethren, but there are things that can be little red flags that we teach. And you start seeing red flags even amongst your brethren, then you may need to ask a few more questions. Yes. Yes.
If you get caught up in a lie or the emotion of a lie, that you can make a knee-jerk reaction and be swayed. But oftentimes, if you go and ask for advice for somebody older or somebody close to, they can point you in the right direction because they're not down in it like you are.
Do you always know when you're maybe deceiving others? You may not always know it. It's amazing how the emotion works. Sometimes having good people with you, and they'll grab you and go, not right. Now we'll talk about that next week where we talk about how we work with others, how we love others, how that really is a really good barometer whether or not we're fighting deception. We can believe something about a person unjustly, can't we? We can slant another person with the greatest of ease. Somebody that you know of integrity will help you. Of course, it goes both ways. Somebody deceiving you, or maybe you going down a path you ought not to. That's really important. You know, I miss something. Again, I'm going to wander a little bit, but I get all these thoughts. Did you know, if we had lived 100 years ago, first off, you'd be using slide rules instead of calculators. But secondly, if you had attended churches in this area, you know what likely you would have heard announcements about almost every week during the summer and the fall? Not gospel meetings, but you know what you'd hear about? Religious debate. Religious debates in the 20s and 30s were everybody did it. The Baptists did it. The Methodists did it. And you know what debates were? You had a proposition. You had rules of proposition. And you got up and they went sometimes a week. Sometimes they went 2 weeks. And they would go 3 to 4 hours a night. You know, that generation learned something about arguments, false arguments, how to answer arguments. Now, again, there were some excesses in that. But I'm just telling you, and even within my lifetime, you know, I was on the fringe of that. I would go to debates, and I really thought as a preacher that I would have to learn how to debate. And I used to do mock debates with others. And we would, you know, I thought, well, if I'm going to preach, I'm going to have to debate. Somebody would challenge you to debate, and you accept that. You almost never see that anymore, do you? So that generation learned, but see, their view toward the Word of God is different in all the denominations. So things have changed. But I'm saying we've got to develop skill sets here. Anything else? I know I'm wandering a little bit, but that was my thought of the day of, you know, my old man illustrations of how it used to be. Other illustrations of skill sets to overcome deception. Okay? Let's love the truth. We need a love of the truth. We need, verse 14, true spiritual growth is measured in your ability to discern. It says, but solid food belongs to those who are of full age. That is, those who by reason of use, and there's your point on experience, who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. One of the tragedies today, and again, I want to warn you here, I don't like the direction churches are going. Okay, that's another old man thing. You know, people get, we're going. But here's where I'm concerned about. I think we're getting it here, and maybe we could do a better job here. But I would be concerned if I was attending somewhere and learning how to discern false doctrine from true doctrine is not a major element of that church's teacher curriculum. There are many churches that have given that up. They consider that negative preaching. And I look at this. This is the basic element of what spiritual growth looks like. Not only do we need to hear what is true and be encouraged in things, but we've got to discern what is wrong. And if the spiritual growth package doesn't include that, you're not growing. You're not growing. And the deception, the battle, again, with Satan has always been deception. Isaiah 5:20, woe to those who call evil good, good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. Here, what does Satan do? You know how Satan easily deceives people? Just take the word love. Love. Well, that lesson talks about how love allows us to overcome the deception. How does Satan, if that's all we learn is that title, what does Satan do with that title? He'll get ready with it. Oh, that's right. You can overcome deception by love. And what does he do? Redefines love. He'll say love is what? Just doing those things that's best for you. And you could give that to others. And you know, if you want to live together for marriage, you know, there's people in religious circles broadly now. It's called justice love. Let's put the word justice on it. Let's put the word love on it. And let's talk about that. That's the love of God. And God says that's fornication. And that is sin. Did you see the problem? If you don't discern, and you just got some phrases in your mind, Satan will redefine them. And so that's why we need to keep thinking. We need to learn that discernment is not bad. Here's a great quote. In an age in which discernment is viewed as a vice and gullibility as a virtue, there is a price to be paid if one decides to be picky about what to believe and how to live. What price do you pay? Think about it. Let's talk about it. We're talking about discernment. Discernment if somebody's lying to us, discernment about false doctrine, discernment about a lot of things. What price do you pay in this culture if you are discerning? This should be an easy one. If you're discerning, there's some things you won't do, everybody else is doing. You pay a price? What's the price?
You get ostracized.
You get ostracized, called names. And the hardest element comes within the church. Are you listening to me? I think we got a strong group here. We got in our group. We got all kinds. Now, I'll tell you. We got some that are strong. We got some that are worldly. We got some that will stand. And we got some that are hiding in the darkness. The group of this size is inevitable. And we try to reach all of them. I'm not saying, you know, people are at different levels. But sometimes you can get a group of Christians. And they may not like you discerning good and evil. And they punish you. But remember what we're talking about. We want to go to heaven. I'm not saying everything that I discern is a heaven or hell issue. But my goal is to grow and discern. I've got to love it. And I may be inconsistent in my application, but guess what I'm going to try to do? I'm going to try to become consistent. Because I'm inconsistent doesn't mean I give up discernment. Discernment takes time. It really takes time. But don't give that up. And right now, I would say your generation, that will be the big battle you're going to face as you go to other churches and other places. The direction of this church could change in time, the change of leadership. There are places that I've preached, I'm not allowed back. Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm not all sure why, but, it's interesting of how, in my lifetime, of how I've seen generations change and attitudes change. And so, again, not that I'm always right, but I do believe that there's a commonality in churches and leadership that are tempting to go down this path of loving truth and hating unrighteousness. Let's do some reading here. Let's just do Psalms 119, 104. Real quick reading. Who'd like to read? Let's get some more voices going here. We'll just... Psalms 119, 104 on the chart, okay? Notice, hate every false way. Another reading. Another, somebody else. 119, 128. Okay?
Therefore, all your precepts concerning all things I consider to be right. I hate every false way.
Okay, then in Hebrews 1, 9.
You have loved righteousness and hated lawlessness. Therefore, God, your God, has anointed you with the oil of gladness more than your companions.
And now they're hating it. It's not like, well, we beat up somebody. But it's the idea, I really want to see. Seeing with your eyes, being committed to a principle. We talk about principled stand. You see, the shortcut is what? It's worldliness. Worldliness is described. It could be as emotionalism. It could be the form of selfishness. The reasoning Christian is in scarce demand today. You be a reasoning Christian. And God will bless you. And you may be able to help others. Okay, now what I want to talk about, let's talk about what is a lie, the remaining part of our study, what is a lie? I'm going to use 1 Kings 13, 18 as an example. Here's a prophet was told by God to go curse this altar, don't eat anything there, go back a different way. For some reason, there was this older prophet, heard about this young prophet and how he succeeded in confronting the king, and he decided to go lie to this younger prophet. Younger prophet said, here's what God told me to do. He knew what God told him. Then the older prophet said this. He said to them, I'm a prophet as you are. And an angel spoke to me by the word of the Lord saying, bring him back with you to your house that he may eat bread and drink water. And he was lying to them. You know what the young prophet did? Oh, you're an older guy and you heard an angel. He went back and ate with them, and then a lion killed him on his way home. Matter of fact, God made that false prophet tell him, oh, you've gone against my word. Now, we know that a lie is a flat contradiction of the truth. We know that's true. But you can lie in other ways. Before I go to the outline, tell me some other ways you can lie. Yes.
Purposeful omission.
Yes. Where you need to give the whole story, you give a partial story with the intent to deceive. I give the illustration here. What if this prophet said, hey, why don't you come to my house after you've obeyed God and go home? Could he have done it then? Yeah, he could have done it then. If he obeyed everything God said, went there, cursed the altar, then went home, didn't eat anybody, then he could have come up later to this guy and met him. Yeah. But you see, that would have been a purposeful omission because he left. Would have left out obeying God. Okay, what else? Well, some other ways we can deceive people. Without directly telling them a lie. You can say, my word said this. I didn't lie to you. Let me give you one. What if we were in a situation and I ask, okay, did anybody in this room, let's say, throw a spitball and hit me in the back of the head? Okay, we'll just use that example. I said, did anybody do that? And no one said anything. Well, that would be a lie by not saying anything when you knew who did it or if you did it, wouldn't it? You can lie by not speaking. But the illustration in one article was, you see this sometimes, and you don't see them much in weddings, but does anybody know this couple shouldn't marry, stand up and speak now, And you knew they didn't have the right to marry, well, you need to stand up and speak now. So there's sometimes just by not saying anything, you can lie. Now, if you think about that, you probably give me better illustrations on this. But sometimes we, by not saying a word, we can allow deception to occur. Okay?
What about Sodom and Gomorrah? Didn't he tell the people outside that there was no man in his house? Right when there was the one righteous man and angels came? And
you'll find some of the people of God saying lies in the Old Testament. And even sometimes God doesn't comment on it, but it still would be a lie. There are various lies that have been stated. And I could have a supplement on this. I've actually got some material on. What's this? If we're against all lies, why did God's people do this? And actually, they did wrong in that. It is always wrong to lie. You know, have you seen the old Geico commercial? Where they've got Abraham Lincoln. What's the saying about Abraham Lincoln? What's the great statement about him as a kid? Did you chop down the cherry tree? And what's the statement? I cannot tell a lie, right? And so they got him later married, and his wife, Mary, is putting on a dress, and she's overweight, and she says, does this dress, you know, make me look overweight? You know, and there's Abraham Lincoln, you know, caught in the dilemma, like, what do I say? I might put that up on the screen maybe before class sometime to see that. But it is interesting. We sometimes can get caught in dilemmas. We want to be against all. Here's the other area I want to talk about. We talked about omitting, not telling all the facts. We've talked about not speaking. Here is another one. Here is another one, and I have seen this one. This one was used with people that I love. It's called equivocation. Equivocation is where you use words susceptible of two or more meanings. It is a lie when such a word is used to intentionally convey a different meaning. I'll give you an example of it. There was a brother that was going off in LaGrange, Georgia. He was going to a bad path. And I knew he had changed his view on baptism. And I was trying to get brethren there rather than me say, this guy's made the change. I said, go ask him about what he believes on baptism. And they would ask him, do you believe baptism is essential salvation? And he'd go, oh, yes. And you know what he meant by that? He believed that you're saved at the point that you believe, and the baptism had nothing to do with initial forgiveness of sins. But he believed that if you believe, then you're going to be baptized. And therefore, it's your faith that saves you, so baptism is essential to salvation. Now, these people want to know whether or not he believed that salvation came at the point of baptism. And he knew what they were saying. These people came back to me, I think you're misrepresenting Joel. Oh, he believes baptism is essential to salvation. Now, he's later come out on that very plainly. And he's doing that on Facebook. You would have to ask him 50 questions to try to understand what he was saying, and he would never give you a straight answer. His goal was stirring people up and wanted to be a martyr before others. That article on talking in code that I made reference to, that's what the person does, talking with code. They have dual meanings, and if you ever call them on the carpet, oh, I meant the word this way. So that's another way you can do that. Let's see, what's the other, co-talkers. Okay. A statement taken out of context. How about that one? You know, there's some examples of that. When Jesus was tried to be on his crucifixion, you know what they said about Jesus? He said, I will destroy this temple made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands. Did Jesus say, destroy this temple and I'll build it in 3 days? Did he say that? Yes. What was the context? Was he going to rebuild a physical temple in 3 days? No. He was going to be raised from the dead in 3 days. And his enemies understood it. But at the trial, they took that passage out of its context to try to accuse him. Politicians don't do that today, do they? I'm telling you, if you're looking at the major network, for the most part, ignore it. It is one lie after another. They take things out of context about a 95% basis. And it's just, you just be better to stay away from it. Now, if you want to learn about deception, we talk about it. But it's a dark, we live in a dark time. Let's see if I got another. Here's another one. The bell hasn't rung yet. We're waiting for that second bell. We'll get a second bell, right? Do you think, Phil? Because I want to give you one more. Duplicity. Duplicity is another one. A statement or act expressing duplicity is a lie. And we'll pick that up next week. But thank you. We'll hope this is interesting. And we're actually going to take a different turn in how you work with others. Is going to show a lot about your commitment to truth and or fighting deception or vice versa. Thank you for your participation tonight.